good morning, everyone. It also helps if I pop the mic up. And welcome to another edition of The Other Side of Midnight. You know, that magic time between dusk and dawn where the things that we would hear about in daytime or around the water cooler or driving to work, and we say, oh, come on. This time of night, you know, you look at things. Well, tonight's going to be one of those nights because we're going to be delving into some things that are frankly pretty freaky. And I myself would not have believed 90%, 50%, 10% of what we're going to hear if I hadn't been conducting my own investigations into the ritualistic, tetrahedral, ceremonial, hyperdimensional physics obsessives that apparently inhabit our leading national space agency, NASA. And I began to discover many years ago that certain activities of NASA, this squeaky clean scientific agency, the epitome of the 20th century cutting edge of American know-how and accomplishment and technological prowess and can-do attitude and all the things that we think of as being uniquely American, American exceptionalism. Then I began to find, going back not just 5 years or 10 years, but back to the beginnings of the space program 50 years ago, half a century, and then even before, into the 40s, this strange, quasi-religious, abstract, arcane, hard-to-pin-down set of activities that were going on in and amongst the NASA engineers that were engaged in the most scientific, the most technological, the most hard-edged, logical activities of the human species. And for many years, for decades, I've tried to reconcile this, and I brought in mathematicians and statisticians, and I've talked to cultural people, I've talked to, you know, John Campbell advocates, all kinds of different approaches to this. What the heck is going on? How can we have, in the 20th century, going into now the 21st, of course, the epitome of rational logic and science, that the cutting edge of the expanding frontier of space, of the solar system, of beyond, how can we have that being conducted in a set of rituals that look like something straight out of Eyes Wide Shut? And we all know the controversy around that very famous Kubrick film, which ultimately wound up, according to the scuttlebutt, getting him killed. I mean, isn't it interesting that the same night that they killed Stanley Kubrick in London, outside London, with a heart attack, they also tried to kill me in Miami. Exactly the same night, exactly the same modus operandi, a heart attack. And the night, of course, that makes this so stunning, when I found this out in retrospect, the night that Kubrick was killed and they tried to get me was exactly 666 days before the beginning of 2001. And 2001 was emblematic in those years of all the hopes and dreams and aspirations of a culture waiting to leave the planet and to find out what's really out there. The whole raison d'etre of the film 2001 was ripping back the veil and showing us reality. Because in that film, the constant presence of secrecy, of lies, of misdirection, of the robotic, you know, supercomputer HAL in charge of the mission, being lied to, et cetera, and essentially going crazy. And that's, in retrospect, what the analysis of the film was all about. Well, against that whole backdrop, the fact that we have real space agency people conducting real bizarre rituals that no one admits to, well, let's kind of take a look at that when we come back on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we are in for one heck of a ride.
Thank you. Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look.
Well, on the other side of midnight, we deal in the world of imagination an awful lot. But remember, I don't know whether it was Margaret Mead or Albert Einstein or, you know, one of those folks who basically said things like, well, without imagination, what do you got? You got nothing. Look around your room. Look around where you are tonight. In a car, in a train, in an airplane, holding that little gadget in your hand. That little gadget that you're listening to us right now, somewhere on this planet in 155 nations, that was the product of imagination. Human imagination. Unfettered imagination. Well, what we're going to talk about tonight is imagination which has been fettered, that has been sculpted, that has been crafted in ways that do not benefit most of us. In fact, don't benefit almost any of us. I want to begin tonight's investigation by telling you the background of Anthony Patch, my guest. He's a retired paramedic. He worked in Oakland, California for 27 years in the private sector emergency services. And then for over 25 years, he's been researching in the fields of physics, cosmology, biology, computer science, and theology. Since the publication of his first two novels in a trilogy, Covert Catastrophe and 2048, Diamonds in the Rough, both which are listed on the guest page of The Other Side of Midnight Tonight, he is now a well-known author and speaker. He is largely heard in Caravan to Midnight, Hagman and Hagman, Truth Frequency Radio, Face Like the Sun, and End Times Matrix News. That one sounds kind of, I don't know, scary. He has over 300 hours of interviews. This will make 302. He's heard weekly around the world. He is best known now for his extensive, leading-edge, and revelatory research focused upon the work being done in Geneva, Switzerland, with a Large Hadron Collider, part of the CERN organization. Specifically, these experiments and the science itself as they relate to biblical prophecy. Anthony, welcome to The Other Side of Midnight.
Well, thank you, Richard. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you. And it's extraordinary, the occult side, what I call sort of the disambiguation of science and fantasy. And I also often say that science and spiritual side, the physics and the spiritual side, are one and the same. They're inseparable. And I appreciate the fact that you're sort of leading us into the occult side that has been obfuscated from the public view.
Well, the definition of occult is that which is hidden. It doesn't mean that which is weird, that which is silly, that which is paranormal, that which doesn't exist. It means that which is hidden. And one of the premises of this show is that an awful lot of hidden stuff is actually not foo-foo and woo-woo and crazy and far out, but actually is a secret technology being used and hoarded and coveted in secret by those who would run the world, because if they let the secrets out, everybody would be empowered, and we wouldn't have oligarchs who think that they basically are one step below the ultimate founding father.
Yeah, and below the godhood. They do see themselves as gods. They think that they are... I believe that they're operating under the grand deception, the grand lie put forth by Satan in the Garden of Eden. I am a Christian. Those are the glasses that I look at science and the world through, is through the discernment that the Holy Spirit has given me. With that said, I believe that, unfortunately, these fellow humans have been deceived and believe that they can achieve immortality, that they shall be as gods, but more importantly, as you say, the hidden science, the priesthood of science, scientists and engineers, I hold no ill will towards, but they are holding back that information passed down through the ages by the secret societies for the purpose of controlling the mass population.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, and I actually want to get into some of the alternative ways of looking, because I used to be like you. When I found out the depth of secrecy that goes on in so many activities in society, which we think should be open, my first reaction was, holy cow, how can we let that go on? And then I realized that there were periods in history where, unless there had been secrecy, information, critical information, would have been destroyed by the masses of the time. And it was only these priesthoods and these secret societies that, by maintaining certain things in privacy, carried through those dark ages to where we now can look at text and we can look at documents and we can look at original manuscripts with a whole new set of eyes and contexts, and we don't automatically burn everything we don't understand, at least most of us don't. So there are times and places, given the frailties of humans, when secrecy is in fact not a wrong, but a right. And I just kind of wonder what your thoughts are on that. Tony, did we lose you? Earth to Tony. Okay. Skype is trying to find Tony. It says we will get him back. Okay. That is not good. That is not a good way to begin a show. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let me try an alternative phone number here. And what we probably should do is to go to some music. When in doubt, always go to good music and pick some of the best music I've heard for a long time. So we'll try to get Tony back. And in the meantime, we will just put on something appropriate. Maybe that Imagination song again. That was actually kind of cool. So, Carlos, if you can pick up the cue, I will work to get Tony back on the air. I'm not hearing anything on my talkbacks. There we are.
High-speed internet system here, so I'm not sure what happened.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, welcome back. Sorry about that little glitch. Did you hear my question, or did you drop out somewhere, midway?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Okay, let's go back to square one. At what point in your life, as you were growing up, did you look around and say, things aren't exactly the way I've been told?
I think I've been a contrarian since birth. I can vividly remember my parents' surprise when I said to them at a very young age, perhaps 5 years of age, did you know that history repeats itself? And they said, where did you hear that from? I said, I don't know. I just observed it. So I think I've been a critical observer since birth. It's perhaps in the DNA.
But what was the earliest moment when you actually began to question various authority figures around you and say, wait a minute, it's not like that? I mean, did you get in trouble in school for doing that?
No, not necessarily. I grew up in a very, middle-class suburban school environment, very traditional. In fact, I grew up just over the hill from UC Berkeley and attended UC Berkeley. And I grew up, I'm 60, almost 63, grew up in the 60s and the turmoil of Vietnam and the protests. And so there are, that whole thing of relevancy to life and what we're doing and questioning was built into, my school years, my formative years. And then when I was at Berkeley, of course, the protests were everywhere. So I think it was thrown in my face to question authority, question the norm.
So you basically, you went into a medical field, you went into the paramedic field, but you actually had all these other disciplines and curiosities that you were pursuing. I mean, you basically were a generalist, and you, from your bio, it looks like you dipped freely into the font of all kinds of knowledge.
Yeah, I have an insatiable desire to read. I mean, I read, as you can see, a broad spectrum, and it's always been that way. And it is a curiosity. It is a love of research. It's a love of connecting the dots. And what drives me, I really find myself led to certain areas in science, and I was led to CERN. Oh, I think I first became aware of CERN's activities when I was in the nuclear surety sector of the U.S. Army and overseas in Germany. And then when I separated in 1980 is when I really started to get into reading more of the popular science, popular mechanics coverage of CERN. And it really wasn't until 1998 that they really pulled the machine, the collider, the large main ring together. And at the point that they started building the main ring is when my research was really honed and focused in on CERN, because I really saw the fascination of science and the appreciation of the engineering. But then it began to unfold like a flower, this hidden side that you had discovered and you described in terms of NASA. I had a similar sense and then revelation or revelatory process about what was going on at CERN. And that really hit me about, let's say about 10 years ago that I really started to see the nefarious side.
So, okay, let's delve into that. What is it makes these high science, high technological projects on the surface look like we're supposed to see them? But when you dig beneath the surface, you find there's all kinds of other stuff going on that shouldn't be within 4 light years of science.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reconcile that? What were your first clues, and why did you pick CERN? I mean, we all have a whole bunch of other high, atomic energy colliders. We have SLAC, we've got Brookhaven, we've got Fermilab. What made you look at CERN and define what CERN is for people that may not have been following this?
Well, CERN, first of all, is it's a science organization. Pardon me, that was broke ground in 1954, and the purpose of CERN initially was for computer modeling of nuclear warheads, nuclear research. We moved into the test ban treaties. We ended up with needing to advance warhead development in computer modeling rather than below ground and above ground, testing. CERN was principally charged with the advancement of nuclear warhead research. This is where computer modeling of all sorts really had its start, even before the internet. And, of course, people have heard that CERN was responsible for founding the World Wide Web, and that was for the distribution of data to laboratories around the world so that they could collaborate on deciphering the data that's today derived from collisions. And that network, of course, exists today as the ESnet 5, the Energy Sciences Network 5. Point is
well,
that...
Well, didn't that also grow out of ARPANET?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it all ties in also with continuity of government in the United States and all of that development.
Well, let's not get too big too soon, okay?
Exactly.
Let's walk before we run. Okay. So CERN is this Swiss institution for high energy physics, which is kind of a consortium among the European high energy physicists. I'm not quite sure which countries would allow other countries to know about nuclear secrets in terms of building bombs, because my understanding is it's a civilian organization, and it really is, at least this is the cover, this is the story. It's only interested in pounding atoms with bigger and bigger machines to find out what they're made of.
That's true. And yet, where your question as to the nefarious side of this came in is when I began to dig in at my previous school, UC Berkeley, into the Advanced Light Source Building, which houses a synchrotron ring-based particle collider. And I began to realize that DNA sequencing, the sequencing of the human genome, took place because of the advances with particle accelerators, specifically high luminosity X-rays. And those are produced as a function of synchrotron energies in accord with gamma rays. This led me directly to CERN. So the connection with Berkeley and CERN was by way of human DNA research and then realizing that there was a multitude of agendas for which particle accelerators were developed, primarily for the physics and also for medical research. So the primary, going back to Dr. Lawrence at Berkeley and Livermore. So I'll try to keep my answer short, but Berkeley led me to CERN, and that's where I began to really focus on CERN.
So what were the first major, shall we say, difference from the public perception of CERN that you found out?
Well, the big one that jumped out at me was the statue of Shiva.
And
photo number one.
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, let's jump ahead, because what sure. I was stunned by the other day, if we go to theothersideofmidnight.com, click on Radio with Pictures, go down to My Items, number one. This just hit the news a couple, 3 days ago, and I didn't even know exactly when you'd been scheduled. And it just seemed to me that the statue of Shiva leaped out, and all the, you know, the you-know-what covering that, oh, they're not really, they don't really work here, and, you know, it wasn't really human sacrifice, and it was all just play. I mean, what the heck was going on with the statue of Shiva in this ritual human sacrifice ceremony that somehow came to light just a couple of weeks ago?
Well, it's actually been there. I believe it was installed in 2011. It's a gift from the from India, because they have their own researchers and funding going on there. And that was the public reason for putting it there. But I got there to Shiva by way of Oppenheimer and the atomic bomb and Trinity and all of that, where, you know, I've become death. So this is all tied in. This is where you begin to look at Oppenheimer's involvement at Berkeley, and then that carries to the statue of Shiva because of the Hindu ramifications. Mm. But Shiva is a three-part male and female deity, typically considered to be a male, but it's the god of destruction and then the laying waste to a neutral plane of existence, and then a rebuilding of the universe. And that statue encapsulates really what the agenda with CERN is.
That's a big order. So we've got the 17-mile-wide circle. Is it 17 miles or 17 kilometers? I always forget.
27-kilometer circumference.
Okay, so it's all right. And it's underground. It's buried underground. And basically
300 feet.
You've got superconducting magnets that form the coils that kind of guide the electrified particles in this race around this ring at higher and higher and higher speeds. It's the most powerful accelerator on the planet, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir.
And the ostensible purpose is to basically, using magnets again, to manipulate these beams so they run into targets, they run into each other, they run into special prepared mixes of subatomic particles, all designed, again, according to the mainstream press, to get us deeper and deeper understanding of atomic structure. You're saying that CERN, as an institution, as a machine, as a very complex multi-billion-dollar-a-year establishment, actually has other purposes.
Well, let's jump ahead just a little bit, and we can come back to it. But the director of CERN, going back just about 4 years ago, publicly stated through their own press releases that their goal is to open portals, gateways to interdimensional realms, to parallel universes, if you will. And when you begin to hear them talking about opening gateways to other dimensions, you can take it from a scientific standpoint and say that they're simply, you know, operating at the quantum level, and they talk about parallel universes because that's what happens when you're in the quantum realm. But if you overlay that with Shiva and some of the spiritual aspects, then you begin to question, what are they seeking by opening? Because their own statement was, we're not sure what's going to happen when we send a message in and what we will get back. And
wait, who was talking about messages?
This was the director of CERN going back about 4 years ago.
And he talked about messages?
Mm-hmm. Sending messages through and receiving back, but we're not sure what we will get back. Even Hawking has talked about this. Stephen Hawking.
Okay, so, all right, so the director is making references which could be allegorical, could be metaphorical, or they
sure.
could be literal. What got you next? What was the thing that really kind of clanged your chimes?
Well, what predated the discovery, so to speak, of Shiva, the statue, was really understanding, and this goes back, oh, maybe 20 years ago when I realized the location of CERN. It straddles the border between France and Switzerland. Mm-hmm. It's built upon the ancient Roman temple to the god Apollo or Apollyon. And in Greek, that means the destroyer. And it has correlation to Revelation 9:11 and the angel to the bottomless pit. That's what first got my attention to look beyond the science at CERN, was the biblical reference to Apollo.
Hmm. Now, Apollo is the counterpart to the Egyptian Horus. Have you looked into that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and hold it there. Okay. We'll get back to what you found on the other side of this short interruption due to a commercial or two or three. Have to pay the bills, as they used to say. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning, Anthony Patch, and we're discussing the mysteries of CERN. And I'm not talking just high-energy physics. We shall return.
When you don't believe a word I say.
Like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever-spinning wheel. Like a snowball down a mountain, or a carnival balloon, like a carousel that's turning.
Ah, yes, Dusty Springfield. You know, no matter who does that, that song is just so evocative. Because it's all about rotation.
Whirling silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind.
And an awful lot of what we're talking about is literally the windmills of our minds, because this physics, as we've interpreted it, actually affects consciousness. So, Tony, how did you wind up figuring out there were multiple agendas at CERN, not the least of which is somehow the manipulation of consciousness?
Well, I think that if we go to your next slide and we see the emblem to Cernunnos, the hunter, and there are a number of representations there, number 2, 3, and 4.
Okay, we're talking down at your items on Radio with Pictures. Mm-hmm. Past Shiva, number 2, Cernunnos Hunter. Click on these, they get bigger. Okay, so we have a figure inside a 5-sided star.
Mm-hmm. Now, you begin to look at the geometry that's involved. If you look at number 2 and also number 1, the Shiva statue, you begin to see not just the ring, but you see tetrahedrons. And I was interested in your mention relating tetrahedrons to NASA, but I began to look at the geometry of the detectors and the geometry that is related in these symbols here.
When pentagram. You say detectors, you mean the detectors of the atomic particles and collisions going on at CERN?
That's correct. And you see the geometric arrangements of octagons, pentagons, and you begin to move into the realm of numerology. And these things begin to click off in your mind, and you're going, okay, they're employing mathematics and geometry along with spirituality to invoke entities, to invoke spirits. They're going through the process of ceremonies. And we'll leap ahead a little bit here. Their video of symmetry, and we begin to look at things like that. Those are overt rituals. But in the beginning, it was looking at these older symbols from which the name was derived or borrowed.
Okay. So where next?
And then you look at the symbol for CERN itself, the logo number 7. Many people have made a lot of this, but I think the easiest one that jumps off is, 666.
Hmm.
Now, that could be stretching, but I think that when we look at symbols, we understand that symbols, corporate symbols included, carry power. They are a focus of energy, be it, positive or negative energy, but symbols are focusing areas, and they convey messages to people who understand what the symbols represent.
Hmm. See, what I see when I look at the CERN symbol, the most prominent one is I see a 9. And the reason that 9 is interesting is because 9 is part of the Schlafly double 6, 27 lines on the general cubic surface, whose solution is 9. And that's the gateway to this whole hyperdimensional torsion field physics that I'm talking about. So I'm just looking at that and I'm saying, they're, wink, wink, nod, nod, basically giving an acclamation that this physics is underlying what they're doing. They're just not telling us.
And it also relates to what Tesla said about understanding the universe. If you can understand the ratio and the significance of 369, then you can unlock the mysteries of the universe. I'm paraphrasing. So you have that in the symbol as well.
Hmm. Okay. So continue.
Well, I think you had asked me about Horus. And if one was to look at an image from the hieroglyphs, you would see that he's holding a key, and that is the key to the bottomless pit. It is the key to everlasting life, to longevity. And he's holding a staff, which also is for the purpose of conveying energy. It is much like a capacitor, if you will. But Horus was, he was the one who was really the god, the hunter god. He was the first hunter god. So we keep coming up with these things regarding hunting and destruction and death. And it leads you to
actually in the Egyptian Osiris / Orion, in the Greek, was the hunter. Horus was his firstborn son. He was destined to become Pharaoh, the Pharaoh of Egypt. And the U.S. presidency secretly is underlined with a Horus mythology. But please continue.
Hmm. No, that's fascinating. I didn't know that about the presidents.
Oh, so, not many people do.
Yet,
but they will.
In the business. That's why you're in the business. Anyway, the mythology is there. The complex science is what I typically focus on more than anything else. But I think that we can jump to the opening of the Goddard Tunnel that they had in Switzerland. That was also an overt ceremony in which they were relating to CERN as well as the opening of portals. And you'll see that in number 17 in your slides.
Go ahead.
No, okay. There were a few more of those. But anyway, I was looking for them. So we keep seeing these crossovers of why are they talking about things that are spiritual in nature in their own video that they produced, in their relationship to where they placed the machine, why they have the statue there, and why Cernunnos was chosen.
See, what I find weird, and sorry to interrupt, but you know, to pick Shiva, even if India is one of their consortium nations, to pick Shiva, the goddess of destruction. I mean, the reason that Oppenheimer stood there is the first atomic bomb is, you know, blossoming over the skies of New Mexico here, is because he was watching death. He was watching the destruction of worlds. He had a very good imagination and a scientific background. But why would you send to a purely research facility, ostensibly dedicated to the highest principles of human knowledge, why would you send a symbol of death and destruction? Does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense on the surface. And
exactly. There's got to be a hidden agenda. So what was the agenda? What did you find out was the agenda?
Well, as I said earlier, the opening of the portal, but the other is to bring through information and perhaps even entities from the other side. Now, all through the halls of science in history, you'll see that people such as Tesla have overtly admitted that they have, in dream states and in channeling, have obtained information, technological advancements from the other side through channeling.
Right.
And this is what they're representing with Shiva, is that they are getting information to advance the technology that they employ there.
How do you get from Shiva, goddess of destruction, to information?
Well, because what they're doing is they are actually using altered states of consciousness to communicate in much the way that the secret societies have for eons, and therefore they're employing the Hindu practices to communicate through channeling to the other side.
Okay. Let's go to some notes you sent me earlier.
Sure.
What do you mean by inside the psyops? What is the sentient world simulation program, and is this in part anchored at CERN?
It is in terms of the application of advanced computers at CERN and also the tie-in to obtaining information from the other side. In so far as...
So hang on. I'm obviously missing a step then. So your model, your theory is that they built this multi-billion dollar machine, 27 kilometers around, a huge ring buried 300 feet down under the landscape between Switzerland and France, to circulate these subatomic particles at relativistic speeds, the speed of light. And because of that process, something happens that opens a gateway between dimensions. Is that your model?
It is when you take the next step, and that's the application of the power that is derived from the collisions to then break.
Well, I wasn't talking about collisions. I'm talking about just racing these things in a ring. Because the more I think about it, the more this actually might not be just pure imagination. We know from other experiments, Kozarev and De Palma and a whole bunch of people that I've talked about on this show, that if you rotate things in a circle and you rotate them fast enough, you basically create a gate between dimensions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you take a slug of subatomic matter, let's say a few grams, I don't know what the actual load is in the accelerator when they're doing experiments, it can't be more than a few grams, and you accelerate that up to the speed of light around a circle, which is 27 kilometers in circumference. If you put people in the middle of that ring, in buildings on the surface, and it's in operation, and it's not hitting anything, it's not colliding anything, it's just these protons or whatever subatomic particles you're accelerating are accelerating to the speed of light, and they, of course, gain enormous mass as you feed more electricity in and in and in through those superconducting magnets, and you got this racing blur at, you know, the speed of light racing around the ground under you. If you're in a set of buildings in the middle of that ring and it's in operation, what happens to the hyperdimensional torsion field connection between this planet and other dimensions? And is this the apex, the epitome of centuries of trying to figure out what the solid-state connectors to other dimensions, i.e. the pyramids and sacred sites that we've measured with our instrumentation, is it kind of a Mark III or a Mark IV or a Mark V 21st-century version of the ancient pyramids, and it's all ultimately about manipulation or access to higher consciousness, and as you said a moment ago, to really, really cool information that the rest of the world doesn't have?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up torsion fields, because essentially what they are creating is first a toroidal field.
Yep.
The circular structure is not there by accident. You can, as you know, use a linear accelerator like the SLAC at Stanford. Why choose
a ring-based? That goes right under the freeway, by the way. You're driving along and you're driving over, and there's this line reaching from the right of the freeway to the left, and it's like you're driving over this incredible atomic accelerator on a normal freeway in a normal car.
Now, that's Interstate 280. I grew up in the area, so I know that place. Yeah, it's very interesting. So the ring-based, what it does is it uses these super-cooled magnets, superconducting magnets, which, as you know, if you accelerate particles through an electrical field, it generates its own, beyond the magnets themselves, which are 100,000 times stronger at 8.3 Tesla than our own Earth's magnetic field. You generate magnetic lines of force orthogonal or perpendicular to the ring itself, and therefore you have the particles accelerating through an electric field, generating additional magnetic lines of force, compounding those of the magnets themselves, and now you can create a toroidal field, a donut shape, which is why they chose the ring, which then leads you to the torsion fields that you described.
Well, when we look out into the galaxy at black holes, you know, these supermassive black holes in the center of galaxies, several million times the mass of the sun, and we look at quasars, the standard model is these are huge, incredibly massive things rotating like a bat out of hell at the speed of light at their periphery, at the so-called, at the edge of the singularity, at the boundary. Mm-hmm. And because they rotate so fast, forces that are not currently understood, I love that phrase in physics, create these two beams at 180 degrees to each other at right angles to the plane of the rotation. So you got
jets.
Jets, North Pole and South Pole jets. If you mm-hmm. could see CERN in some kind of wavelength, whatever, would you see something jetting up above the ground at right angles to the protons or whatever the atomic particles being accelerated? In other words, have they created like a miniature black hole to probe the torsion interaction with energies big enough now to finally make it work?
I can take that apart a little bit, but I'm going to answer it and say that, yes, you do have the what are more commonly referred to in the electric model of the universe as Birkeland currents, twisted strands of opposing charged particles, positive and negative, in a twisted pair helical structure that connects planets and stars together naturally in the universe. What they are generating are Birkeland currents that will extend out from the center of the toroidal field. So that's my way of looking at what you're describing from a supermassive black hole as the two jets. Now, these are plasma jets that are actually ejecting from the core of a plasma body, but that's my own personal direction. I like the Thunderbolts Project work on the electric universe. I'm not a spokesman for them, but I like their theories as opposed to talking about black holes.
Well, the only thing that keeps them from really understanding everything is they don't understand torsion and the interaction of magnetic fields and plasmas in the creation of torsion. But that's
agree with you.
That's work for a few. So let's go back to CERN. If this model is correct, where is CERN and what is on exactly the other side of the Earth? Through the center of the Earth, what's the exit point for the other beam if we're talking about a dimensional beam?
Well, this is going to lead me into my biblical background, which indicates that the location at the Roman temple to the god Apollo, Apollyon the Destroyer, that it is also surmised that it is purposely situated over what was believed in the Greek and Roman times as the doorway to the abyss. So in the Revelation 9:1, it talks about the opening of the abyss and the locust army coming forth. So if we are to follow that line of thinking, it is there to open the abyss, and the jet extends into the core of the planet.
And then through the core. Remember, it's not the planet it's sitting on. It's the dimensions, the rotation, and the physics and all that.
Right.
That beam goes into some other dimension. It doesn't reach the core. But the idea that it's positioned exactly on the Earth where it would have access to that abyss, to that gateway, that's pretty interesting.
Well, also on top of that location is the fact that this is a node of ley lines, and those are laid out in tetrahedral patterns around the spherical shape of the Earth. I don't believe in the flat Earth, just to toss that in there. But yeah, it's where the ley lines happen to come together in a significant node.
Okay, now does this get us to something called a Mandela portal?
Well, that's not what I consider to be related to CERN, more to quantum computers, specifically the adiabatic quantum computers made by D-Wave Corporation.
Okay, well, let's not go there yet because that would require a whole other, let's stay with
it
CERN.
It will.
Yeah, let's stay with CERN. Okay. So we've got this gadget, multi-billion dollar gadget, and it is opening a doorway, maybe. See, the reason I can say that with a straight face is because I have measured these doorways opening using the Accutron to measure good old-fashioned solid-state amplifiers called pyramids. So the ancients were able to open these doorways. The question is how much more efficient is CERN? Have you sat down and actually tried to put some numbers to the size or the efficacy of a gateway when CERN is operating? Not when it's colliding anything, just running, just as a ring, running as a ring at the speed of light. It must be an enormous gate.
Well, I have described it as a freeway in terms of what it's going to allow through. This is at the quantum level as I view it, and I view it in terms of a stable portal that will exist for only picoseconds of time. But in a quantum state, that is an enormous time frame. And I believe that they are going to, or their goal is to open a stable portal that will remain long open long enough to allow digital information to come through.
Okay. Now, what kind of information? Because remember, the Nazis had their Thule Society, and there were rumors of all kinds of seances and
the Vril Society.
The Vril and all that. And then we go to California, and we look at Hubbard, and we look at the guy
JPL.
Who created JPL, Jack
Parsons.
And we look at the Babylon working, and he was trying to invoke Horus and all that. This is all without, as that great line in Forbidden Planet says from Walter Pidgeon, without physical instrumentality. What happens if you create a CERN device, a billion-dollar device, that can do this electrically on command, and you put a whole bunch of sensitives, ESP-type people, in the middle of the ring? What information could they get from where?
Well, let me go into the woo-woo world of speculation.
That's what we're here for.
Okay. Now, this sounds pretty strange, and I can't necessarily back it up, but just from the peripheral things that I've looked at in terms of your talk about Shiva, et cetera, we look to the worship of Saturn, the black sun, the black cube. If we look at the physics that are involved, look at the North Pole of Saturn. Saturn has what I consider to be, let's say, naturally, in quotations, operating at the North Pole, a synchrotron particle accelerator. These are contra-rotating clouds of high-energy particles. You know that that generates synchrotron energies. It also creates your torsion field and your toroidal shape. The theory that I have is that CERN is going to create electrical Birkeland currents to reconnect Earth with Saturn, because they're trying to recreate the relationship of Earth and Saturn as existed in mythology, which is called the Golden Age of Kronos, Kronos being Saturn.
Right.
And I'll stop there because I try to make my answers short so you can jump in, but I think they're trying to reconnect with Saturn to unlock and tap into knowledge that is contained within the black cube, the tesseract that's represented at the North Pole, and they
Wait. And you say the black cube? What black cube at the what North Pole?
Well, from what I have read, there appears that a black cube, much like a computer cube, resides within the gaseous body of Saturn, and it is created and generated by the energies of the North Pole synchrotron.
So are we talking about Earth or Saturn now? We're
talking about Saturn.
Saturn, okay. Now, you're familiar with that Saturn, of all the planets in the solar system, has this incredible hexagonal ring surrounding its north pole, right?
Right. That's what I just described as the synchrotron particle accelerator at the North Pole, but it's naturally occurring.
Well, it's part of the physics of the planet and how planets generate these kinds of geometries in their I mean, the clouds on Saturn are kind of like a dye tracer where you can see stuff going on that you wouldn't see if there was no atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that huge hexagon is part of the hyperdimensional torsion field model, and it's endemic to Saturn because Saturn has the right structure, the right rotation and all that to make that visible. But that physics operates anywhere if you set
Correct.
Up the right technology. So
I
that brings us back to CERN.
Yeah, I would venture to say that if you looked, for example, at the northern pole of our sun with, as you say, the right technology, the right instruments, the right detectors, we would see the same thing occurring.
Oh, my God, how did you know, Tony? They did this years ago, but they don't have the resolution. It's called helioseismology. They're looking basically at sound waves inside the sun, like sound waves inside the Earth, earthquakes, solar quakes, whatever. It's called helioseismology, helio from helios, from the sun, the Greek, which, by the way, is the counterpart of Horus. So helioseismology lets you map the interior of the sun by watching the bouncing around of sound waves and how they interact with the surface, where you can see the transduction of the sound waves into light waves, measure their Doppler shifts, and measure the actual You can reconstruct the 3D stuff going on in the sun from measuring these Doppler shifts from the surface.
You can see the patterns.
You can see the patterns. So what they found is there's this weird current going around the north pole of the sun, mm-hmm. and they just don't have enough resolution to see if it's a hexagon.
Exactly.
But it's beneath the surface.
So if we were to go to other planets like Jupiter or Venus, it might be a little bit easier if we could do a flyby on the North Pole to detect those.
But we don't see these at Jupiter. We don't see them at Neptune or at Uranus. We only see it at Saturn. But Saturn is also very weird because Saturn is the only planet in the solar system which has its internal magnetic field precisely aligned. I mean exactly aligned with its rotational axis. Unlike mm-hmm. any other planet, the Earth's magnetic field is tilted like 10, 15 degrees. Jupiter's about the same. Uranus and Neptune is like 60 degrees. Saturn is exactly aligned, and that makes the physics of Saturn unique. And so this signature, this geometric signature at around the North Pole is also unique, and you're saying that there is a potential to try to connect in the physics CERN with the physics of the North Pole of Saturn.
And they will do that by way of the southern pole, which is a spiral. Looks very much like the spiral over Norway that was observed many years ago back in, what was it, 2009?
Mm-hmm. Just before the president was to visit to pick up his Nobel Prize.
Exactly. And so there are NASA photographs that you've seen that look very much like that same spiral occurring, and that is because of the synchrotron energies that penetrate through the planet to the southern pole. But in our discussion of the torsion fields and the toroidal field and then the opposing jets, the synchrotron energies are those two jets, but they're generated at the North Pole. But also I wanted to add...
I tell you what, hang on. We're at the top of the hour. We've got about a 30-second station break, a little music.
Okay.
And we'll be back. My guest of the morning, Tony Patch. We're talking about CERN and the idea that maybe it's being set up as a hyperdimensional link to the bizarre physics of Saturn. And wait till you see where we're going to go next. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
Is it cloak and dagger? Could it be spring or fall? I walk without a...
But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say live and let die.
Yes, one of my favorite Bond films. You know, they hook into mythology. They hook into something that makes it resonate with the rest of us. So getting to resonance, what is it that, in other words, why is Saturn important for them to connect with? Does this connect back to the Nazis and their secret preoccupation with Saturn during the war?
I believe it does, because during the war, they were worshiping the Black Sun, which is Saturn. And so if we go back to the story of the Golden Age of Kronos, Saturn was and still is a brown dwarf star. And I believe that that's why it has similar characteristics it can share with our sun, both being stars. But the myth
we have to define what you mean by that. It was found in the 1960s. You know, obviously the sun is a star because the sun is incredibly bright, emits a whole bunch of energy. And the energy source has been really kind of mysterious for thousands of years, up until a guy named Hans Bethe on a train during World War II figured out that the sun seems to generate its energy from thermonuclear sources, you know, and the so-called Bethe cycle and all that was born.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1960s, scientists flew high-altitude aircraft with telescopes that could look in the infrared, and they looked at Jupiter and Saturn and Uranus and Neptune, and to their astonishment, these were telescopes mounted in a Learjet flying at 40,000 feet above the Earth's atmosphere mostly, so they could see the faint infrared radiation. These planets were all glowing in the infrared like they were miniature stars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the classic definition of a star and a planet was a star generates light and planets reflect light. Well, this in the 1960s was a real stunner because now we have planets that are generating light. It's not visible. It's in the infrared. It's heat. But they actually, each of these planets, except for Uranus, which is about break even, each of these planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and Neptune, are emitting more energy from inside than is coming from the sun. So then the question is, where is the energy coming from? And in our model, that gets back to hyperdimensional torsion field physics. Sorry for the background there.
No, that's good. And it ties into the electric model of the universe, in which all of the planets and the stars, essentially the entire universe, but let's focus on our solar system, that they're all electrically connected anyway. And they're drawing their energy from the plasma that makes up what in the parlance of science today they want to call dark energy and dark matter. But really, the void of space is not a void. It's not a vacuum. It's comprised of ionized gas in the form of a plasma, the fourth state of matter. And our sun and those planets are drawing energy from the plasma that's surrounding them. And I differ with, you know, the model of a nuclear model fusion taking place. I believe that what our sun is doing is continually drawing more energy, as Tesla called it, from the ether.
Mm-hmm. But then how do you get rid of the fact that you've got, you know, trillions and trillions and trillions of tons of matter all collected in one space? Gravity is going to make that shrink. That's going to raise temperatures and pressures. At some point, you're going to go nuclear in the center of that thing anyway. So what do you do with the nuclear output that has to be there just of necessity because that's the way the universe works?
Well, it's giving up energy. I mean, we see that with high energy, high accelerated protons, for example, that are coming from the sun. So it's giving up energy all the time.
But wait, are you saying that its energy source is not nuclear, that that's a component, but the primary energy source is coming from somewhere else?
It's coming from the surrounding plasma.
Ah, okay, hold on. We're at the five after the hour. We've got a break here. That's how you pay stuff. Tony Patch is my guest this morning. We're on the other side of midnight, and we're discussing all those things that you don't really talk about in broad daylight, I guess. We shall return. Yes, fantasy, earth, wind, and fire. What we're talking about might sound like fantasy, except we know there's a physics here. We know that the ancients were using it. We know they built an incredible network of pyramids to amplify and work with this invisible energy, that it had effects on biology, it had effects on consciousness. Why is it a fantasy to think that maybe in the 21st century, the arcane ritualists that appear to be behind these mega scientific projects, in fact, you're not doing something similar, except they're using all the technologies we now have to make a better doorway. Tony, what do you think?
Well, I believe that that's exactly what they're going after. And as I mentioned, the director at CERN, and I have his quote here now, Sergio Bertolucci was the director of research and scientific computing. And he said, out of this door might come something, or we might send something through it. They're trying to
Good
get into
grief.
These extra dimensions.
He's really admitting it there.
Absolutely.
That's not even a metaphor, because, you know, in any conventional atomic physics I know, you're not sending something through to anywhere. The 3D matrix, the reality we're in, is supposed to be it. There's no extra dimensions, except if you look at some of the arcane models that can't be probed because the energies we have are too low anyway to get to them in their mathematics. This guy seems to be almost telling it.
Well, he is. And interestingly, part of his title is scientific computing. And this leads me back to the tie-in to D-Wave, which, you know, we can or cannot go into tonight, but
well,
how complex is the
D-Wave conversation? Because I don't think we're done with CERN yet, are we?
No, we're not done with CERN by a long shot.
Okay. By the way, one of our guests and faculty, and I use that term with great specificity, Georgia Lambert, has sent in a couple of interesting items. In the Hindu view, destruction is not negative or bad. It's the destruction of the crystallization. In other words, you know, being stuck that allows a greater movement of the soul. I think that's kind of, you know, talking about angels and heads of pins, because if you have to destroy the village to save it. Anyway, her second note is that Saturn is called the Lord of Karma, because in ancient times it was the outermost planet and the edge or barrier of the solar system. Thank you, Georgia.
Well, this kind of goes into the New Age parlance of, you know, ascending, the ascension, and it ties into DNA. And as I said, DNA is part of the colliders, and that's a whole other discussion. But this whole idea of human longevity and eventually immortality ties into the colliders. And it's hard to think that way, but there's an awful lot of scientific discipline that feeds into, as proof of concept laboratories, feeds into CERN from multiple agendas. But it ultimately is this whole idea of creating a new race of beings and a new planet. CERN, part of what Shiva indicates is that neutral environment, that white slate, and it's even symbolized in their video, Symmetry, the white plain of the desert, the playa, represents the terraforming of the planet, the rebirth of a new race of beings and a new planet.
Now, wait. You're leaping to a whole bunch of conclusions and not giving us the evidentiary links. How do you get from CERN is an arcane device being used by weird ritualists to conduct ceremonies in the theory that they can connect with whoever's on the other side, Satan perhaps, to the idea that they're going to remake the planet after it's totally destroyed in the image of what?
Well, in the image that Satan wants to create, because he hates God's creation, which includes the life forms and the planet. How I get there is by interpreting their own video, Symmetry, which depicts the destruction taking place, the playa, and then the birthing of a new race, which is the ritualistic dance that they perform. It's all in the interpretation based upon understanding the ritual itself.
Let's go to another ritual, which you said was connected, the Goddard Tunnel. When you look at that video, I mean, I'm pretty much up on some of the symbology. I've spent a lot of years now looking at this stuff. It is really freaky, and frankly, it's dark, and it portends, to me, a discontinuity. That these guys either have got information or think they have, that some discontinuity is coming and they're getting ready. I mean, this ritual with Shiva at the CERN Institute, you know, the fake killing of the woman. What the hell, and I'm using that term very specifically, what the hell is that all about?
That was a prank in my estimation. You see the person holding the knife wearing running shoes. I mean, my thinking is that this was staged. The cameraman was there in the building and ready for this. It's just a prank. That's a relatively public area.
But you're on to something. What if it wasn't just a prank but disinformation to lead people, the news media, away from the idea that CERN is anything but the scientific institution we've talked about? In other words, the best way to provide a cover that there's hidden rituals going on is to make a fake ritual, blow it apart, make everybody go, oh, that's what that is. It's Doug and Dave doing crop circles. It's, you know, NASA faking landing on the moon, that kind of nonsense.
Sure.
What do you think?
I follow your line of thinking, but I go to a bigger perspective, and this is all part of the psychological operations that are taking place planet-wide. This also ties in with the Mandela effect. Mandela effect's not being created at CERN like a lot of people want to say, but what I'm getting at...
First of all, define the Mandela effect for people who may have been not listening.
Okay. Well, the idea is that there are things in popular culture, including the Bible, that are being changed. Lines in books, the names of products, lines in the Star Wars movies and scripture are being modified, that words are being changed.
So wait a minute. So some people, when they read a book or they see a TV show or whatever, they remember it differently than what they're seeing.
That's correct.
But other people don't remember it differently at all. They accept what they're seeing as the actually the way it was written or the way it was originally aired.
Right.
Interesting.
But this is what I call the pebble in the pond. This is part of the sentient, it's an integral part of the sentient world simulation. It is a mirror, a computer modeling of everything that is going on the planet. Every person is represented as a node, 7 billion plus nodes within the computer sentient world, simulating by real-time crunching of data that is gathered from all sources around the planet for the purpose of predicting human behavior and responses. So these things like this ritual and the Mandela effect are pebbles in the pond to build algorithms that will predict human responses. This is future crime and things like that.
You mean the Tom Cruise movie?
Mm-hmm.
Pre-crime.
Pre-crime.
Okay.
Thank you. Yep. So this is what that ritual represented. It really was just to get people to respond to it so that the sentient artificial intelligent computer systems composed within SWS are able to build mathematical...
Back up. SWS, I think we skipped something. This is the sentient world simulation. What the hell is that? Where is it based, and how do you have any information on this?
Well, it's public information. It comes out of Purdue University, 2006. They published this. You can type that into your Google search engine. It'll pop right up. And it was implemented and presented in a paper in 2007 by Purdue.
Wait a minute. When you say implemented, you mean they actually had the machine, they had the simulation running, and they turned on the switch?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's
Do you ever see a movie called The Forbin Project?
Sure.
From the 1970s?
Mm-hmm.
This sounds eerily like that.
Well, that's all part of what mass media and Hollywood's all about, is predictive programming of the masses. So that you'll accept it as a norm. So what we're talking about here is a program that tracks everything that is going on in the world. And if you go to your Bible, that looks like the beast system that no man will be able to buy or sell unless you take the mark of the beast.
Okay.
So what we're looking at with Mandela, we're looking at is human reactions and responses and communications about the topic, all feeding into building an algorithm.
Wait. You're skipping over something really crucial. You're saying, well, this is really important. If I'm getting it wrong, you know, obviously other people can probably get it wrong too.
Sure.
What you're saying is that these Mandela examples are actually being foisted on the public worldwide by some agency to use these discrepancies as a way of judging the discontinuities in civilization and culture and consciousness, and that some computer is keeping track of how many of these are noticed by how many and what happens as a result.
That is correct.
So where's this supercomputer doing all the tracking?
Well, it's not just one. This goes back to CERN in terms of the computing systems that are tied into CERN. This is D-Wave Corporation's adiabatic quantum computer systems. There are multiple models. On my website, I projected that their model that they are not talking about is the 4096.
Okay, for folks, again, that have not been watching, what the heck is a D-Wave quantum computer?
It is a non-transistor, non-gate model-based computer. They use, in place of transistors, qubits. Qubits operate in a superconducting state, 100 times colder than outer space. It operates by way of superposition of not just binary zeros and ones, but actually zeros and ones that can operate simultaneously. A zero can be a one, and simultaneously a one can be a zero. It operates interdimensionally. It operates in parallel dimensions.
Now, wait. Are we talking real science? Are we talking theory? Are we talking somebody who'd like to do this? Or who's actually building one of these?
Okay. The D-Wave Corporation is a British Columbia company. They operate in Silicon Valley in California.
Wait, British Columbia. Britain meaning the UK. And Columbia meaning the big country in South America.
No.
British Columbia and Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, Vancouver, okay. Well, you said they were British in California. Columbia. I wondered. Okay.
No, but they operate. Okay. Their headquarters is, they're Canadian based. That's their business office, if you will. But they manufacture the qubits and the computers in Silicon Valley.
Okay. Now, a lot of people, Google and a bunch of other people, are trying to create a quantum computer, and there are various conflicting claims. By the way, if you want to join the conversation, go over to The Other Side of Midnight on Facebook, Other Side of Midnight on Facebook. You can join us there. We're also on Twitter. And don't forget Club 19.5. If you missed some of this conversation and you want to play it again, the archive Club 19.5 is the perfect way to do that. That's what our little promos are all about. We live in an asynchronous world. 155 countries, including CERN, is listening tonight. Sorry, but I wanted to get that in.
No, that's fine. If people will go to anthonypatch.com and go to my Urgent Discoveries tab and scroll down to the Mandela portals, you will see quotes from a video from Gordy Rose, who's one of the co-founders. He's the chief science officer for D-Wave. You'll see a D-Wave computer link or video link there, and I've extracted a couple of things from there. One of the quotes is, and I'm going to read this very quickly to you, and when you increase the number of these devices, he's talking about qubits, every time you add one of these qubits, you double the number of parallel universes that you have access to. Until such time, you get a chip like this, which is about 500 of these bits, something like 2 to the 500th power of these guys living in that chip. And he's referring to the number of parallel universes that the computer is operating with.
Again, this sounds a little, shall we say, theoretical. Mm-hmm. Who's actually built one of these, and what are the results?
Okay, well, D-Wave has built several models of that, and I list that again here on this Urgent Discoveries tab. Their latest model that came out February of last year is the 1024, and it was built on a 2048 chip. 2048 is the number of qubits on the chip, and the 2048 will be announced later this year.
And what is this company proposing to do with these quantum computers?
Well, they sold their first one, the 128, to Lockheed and USC
okay.
for their AI quantum computing open source laboratory. They've also sold to NASA. You mentioned Google. Google bought a 512, actually two of the 512s. And just a few months ago, Los Alamos purchased their D-Wave 2X, their latest model of the 1024.
So if we have a network of these D-Wave computers, and they're real quantum computers, and they can handle an amazing amount of parallel information, you're saying that if you put them in the right network and you feed them the data from these various PSYOP experiments, like changing the quotes in California Dreamin', That bump, that kind of anomaly, is going into a vast database that someone controlling this network is using to do what?
Well, the ultimate aim is control, and to do that, you have to predict the responses of the people you want to control, and you do that by gathering real-time information.
Oh, my God. I just had an amazing thought. Tony, I had an astonishing thought. Hang with me on this.
Okay.
Is Donald Trump one of their experiments? No, I'm deadly serious, because there were sequences in Star Trek. Remember when they would have arguments with computers, and at one point Kirk defeats a computer by logic, and Spock turns to him and said, that was a brilliant display of logic, Captain, that kind of thing. The things that are coming out of Trump for the last year are so contradictory. Like white is black, and black is white, and up is down, and down is up. And in other words, it's almost like his intention is to drive the mainstream news media totally wacko and nuts, because nobody can predict tomorrow what he's going to say, inconsistency with what he said 2 days ago, or someone said earlier this evening. I'm only talking about the last 10 minutes. He just said something in the last 10 minutes. What do you think? In other words, is that, if this computer system is designed to drive us nuts, to measure how nuts we are, would that not be the perfect way? Because everybody, even on internationally, is focused on this bizarre election that makes no rational sense.
Let's call him an agent of disruption.
Hmm. So you don't think I'm totally nuts with this theory?
No, no. We know that the election, I will say, I believe the elections are always rigged. He's a puppet. He's put up there for the purpose of disruption, but more importantly, distraction. This is to distract. There's an awful lot of things going on in our lives that distract us, but he and Hillary are distracting us from what's going on. It's the left hand of the magician. What I say in the right hand of the magician that's really going on, that we really should be more concerned with, is CERN itself.
Okay, and why?
Well, going back to this whole goal of opening a dimensional portal, the opening of the abyss, in my way of looking at it through the lens of Christian scripture, I believe that they have the key, and this is in my urgent discoveries, going back to the D-Wave computer, which was built for the purpose of cracking codes and creating codes, cryptography, they have now the key to the bottomless pit, which is the number 4096, which goes to a algorithm in which you break it down into prime factors, and that cracks the code. That's a whole nother discussion, but they have the key. They're located over the doorway.
When you say cracks the code, hang on. Cracks the code to what?
Well,
are we looking for information coming from higher level entities? Are we talking, you know, demons, Satan's minions, people are pretending to be angels, people who are passed on that are dead, that are on the other side? Who are they talking to, or who do they think they're talking to?
Well, the angel that is cast from heaven that has the key to the abyss. And the way I have deciphered that is that the key itself has to be defined, and the key is a code, and the code has a number. That key has a number, and that is the 4096.
You realize
that
this is sounding a bit
an algorithm.
You know, Tony, this does sound a bit like something out of Ghostbusters. Remember when she opens the fridge and there's this Sumerian temple?
Yeah.
And, you know, the magic word is Zool. Mm-hmm. And then what's his name becomes the key master at some point. I mean, again, the blurring between these rituals, do these guys at CERN, the fakers and the pretenders, this video notwithstanding, do the real guys at CERN believe that harnessing magic, harnessing ceremony, harnessing sympathetic vibration is a way to, along with technology, to change the world? And if so, what does that leave all the rest of us?
Well, my estimation, it either leads to our death and destruction, or the remaining humans on this planet being relegated to a serf class of slaves to serve the elite.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to the Mandela effect and these Mandela portals.
Sure.
So if I'm reading this correctly, you're saying all these reported instances of inconsistencies in videos and movies and books and all that, they're really part of a very elaborate planting of evidence to see how we will react?
Yes, because I call this quantum pollution. I call these items that have been extracted from the other side that will have the most effect on the human psyche for the purpose of developing these algorithms. I believe that this is information that has been gathered from the other side that is then employed in our realm. So what I'm saying is that they said, okay, what can we do that will have the biggest effect, that we can learn the quickest, that our AI computer can self-learn, self-taught, how to predict human behavior?
Okay, so hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. You can talk to Tony and ask him questions, because I've got many more. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. This is one of my favorites from Supertramp. Let's listen for a couple of seconds here.
But I must be moving on. Like a king without a king.
castle, like a queen without a throne. I'm an early morning lover, and I must be moving on. Yeah, yeah. Now I believe in what you say.
And the other one I love for them is Take the Long Way Home. A lot of memories associated with that song. A lot of memories associated tonight because we're trying to figure out, is memory real or is it being tinkered with? Now, I got to tell you, Tony, I have people coming to me privately who are relating experiences that are not public, they're not in libraries, they're not on the net, they're just things in their homes that are not the same. They remember it differently. That is not, unless we're dealing with supercomputers and AI and we're totally at the mercy of some incredible extraterrestrial intelligence, and all this is just some big experiment, that kind of private discernment of a different memory because things are not the same, that argues to me that there is a real hyperdimensional Mandela effect, and maybe, again, the pattern that you're observing of people planting things, of someone planting stuff, is, again, noise designed to obscure the fact from real people that reality is really being changed.
Well, I'm open to that. You know, as a researcher, I try to keep my own hubris from interfering with the evidence. And I can go down that rabbit hole with you, if you will. But let's take a look on my urgent discoveries. I've got a photograph of a CERN physicist who's holding up, has in his lap, Bond 1 and then Mandela.
Okay, do we have that in our image bank tonight?
Unfortunately, I don't think so.
The one you want to see and you don't have it?
I wasn't sure we'd get into this.
Oh, so describe this again.
It's a physicist in his lap. He has a sign that says Bond 1, referring to James Bond.
Right.
I'll define that. And then Mandela, and this is at CERN. What he's describing, obviously the Mandela is self-explanatory, but it's sourced from CERN in terms of the computers, not the collider. Bond refers to the Monte Carlo system of statistical analysis in particle physics. Now, that relates to Bond in terms of Casino Royale, and you mentioned Bond a little bit ago, about an hour ago, but Casino Royale, the movie, relates to Monte Carlo because that's in Monaco, which is where the movie was set. What they're saying here is that we're playing a game with you. Mandela effect is a game. It's a psychological operation. I believe that how they're manipulating what we perceive in our physical realm is because our minds are being altered, not the physical world itself, but more importantly, our perception of it, because the AI system is literally tapping into and affecting how we process our world.
But again, you know, to take the other side for a moment here, suppose it's not someone doing this. Suppose it's just the physics. Because when I look at the physics of the Earth, of this solar system, I see enormous cycles. In fact, you made mention of it in the last hour. You said at an early age, you asked your parents, have you noticed that history repeats?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a remarkable deduction because on a large scale, in terms of the model, history does repeat. But the details are different, but the large-scale patterns of rise and fall and ascension and descension and all that, yes, they are there. They're implicit in the physics of a rising and falling background. And the pyramids were designed in this model to keep us from rising and falling too much. They were trying to even out the waves so that we wouldn't lose our memories of who the hell we are. When we reach these nodal points, we appear to be going through one now if you take the model that, in fact, this stuff is real and that what's happening is trying to put, you know, handsbrinker holes in all the dikes to keep people from realizing how many holes reality actually is developing.
Let me ask you a question then. Do you think that there is a warping of time or a tunneling or some manipulation of the time-space environment that we live in? I don't know if that's a direct enough question, but do you think that time is being altered, maybe is another way of putting it?
Well, again, I'm approaching this from the hyperdimensional physics model, and I'm seeing the background physics changing. physical constants are changing. Rupert Sheldrake, it turns out I'm not alone in thinking this, Rupert Sheldrake has a wonderful list of all the so-called physical constants that are in the textbooks, and they're not constant.
Including gravity. I'm very familiar with his work.
Yeah. So if the constants are not constant, if the physics itself changes, you could say that there would be a group when you get to a critical point, Tony, that want to take control of the process. Remember in Close Encounters, there's this line, it's time we took control of this conversation, and they flip on the recorders and all that.
Right.
So is someone now, with CERN and other technologies, other locations we're not aware of, are they basically trying to create a technology that as we get to this critical nodal point in the natural cycle of background physics, they will interject, they will intervene, they will dash in to try to freeze the new reality into the pattern that they want, not that we want? Is that possible?
You know, I don't even know if that is possible. That's a heck of a scenario. I don't think you can freeze physics. It's much akin, I would say, to freezing the universe.
Well, if you're thinking of patterns, you know, remember, there is this slow glass model for the ether, where if you do something, it doesn't take place at trillions of times the speed of light. It takes place at 1 trillionth the speed of light. So the effect takes a very long time to propagate. So it isn't necessarily frozen, but it's really, 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 really slowed down. Like you see this in supercooling experiments that they do, among other places, at CERN, where they take a collection of atoms, they supercool them down to within a whisker of absolute zero, you know, thousands of times closer than we can normally get.
Yeah, the Bose-Einstein condensate.
Exactly. And at those temperatures, you can freeze time. Mm-hmm. So suppose that's only a metaphor, a physical metaphor for what you can do when the physics itself goes through one of these nodal points. You can freeze, you can imprint your pattern on the next cycle. Is that what they might be trying to do?
Well, you know, the part of the purposes of the pyramids was to capture technology and pass it on to future generations, no matter what happened with societal changes or even terrestrial changes. That's why they're pyramids, was to pass on the knowledge of the technology. Unfortunately, it's not inscripted, but you look at the mathematics and the energy readings you've taken, that's information passed on to future generations. Now, my question is, are we, in our movement of our planet through the cosmos in general, the solar system, but the solar system itself moving through the galaxy and the plane of the galaxy, do you see that we are marking an age, much like the Maya talked about their age, the end of an era, the long count?
Yes.
And the
good news is, if you do the readjustments of the calendar and you put it together with the measurements that Robin and I did at Chichen Itza, 2012 is this year. This is 2012.
Well,
this is the end of the Mayan calendar. I can corroborate that. In fact, I'm going to do that. You know, at some point when we do a show, we'll do the celestial mechanics.
That fits with the Hebrew calendar. The end of September is the end of the 70-year jubilee.
Interesting. So what I'm saying is, in the physics, that's a sensitive time when, if you're a bunch of old oligarchs that have been running the world for God knows how long, and you want to keep running it, remember, in this time, it's an opportunity for free will to reassert itself, for all of us to, I mean, the apocalypse is the definition not of catastrophe, but of enlightenment, of the scales falling away, of seeing who the good guys are and the bad guys are, and boy, are they becoming so obvious.
Yeah.
At that time, would not the bad guys try to get something together to basically imprint their vision of the universe, of reality?
No, I don't disagree with you, because we can cross it over to Scripture, and Satan knows he has but a short time. And so if he is trying to freeze things and hold them the way they are, then that will thwart God's grand plan, which is ultimately to imprison Satan and do away with evil.
It's kind of like hovering forever on the event horizon of a black hole.
Yes.
Okay. The numbers, if you want to join this conversation, we do have time to include you. 505-796-8802. 505-796-8802. I wish I could do that Lily Tomlin voice. She does it so well. or Enterprise Mission on Skype, or The Other Side of Midnight on Skype. And remember, our Facebook and Twitter conversations go to the upper left-hand corner of the Other Side of Midnight homepage. Click on those little symbols there. They should be brilliantly colored. They're not. I don't know why. But when you click on them, they light up. So you click on Facebook or on Twitter, and you can join the conversation that way. And I do get a few questions passed to me from Facebook that I'm able to read through the secret dialogue going on behind the scenes. So if you want to get me a question that way, that's the way to do it. Sorry. So go ahead.
No, I think you're onto something here. Let me ask you to explain the torsion field a little more for me, because I view that as the twisting of the aluminum can, and you're twisting and you're warping. I guess you're warping
the quantum field. That is the David Wilcock model. Actually, it's not bad. The torsion field is just the ether. It's just the matrix. It's the Pleiadians, if we believe in Pleiadians, they called it fine matter, meaning mm-hmm. that reality is composed of a hierarchy of tiny stuff going down to the ultimate tiny stuff, and that's the field itself. And out of the field, you can create anything. You can create it just with your mind. You know, you talked about the Minority Report earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Have you followed the work of a scientist at Noetics Institute called Dean Radin?
No.
Okay. Dean Radin, together with some folks at Princeton, developed a technology system called the Princeton Eggs. These are random number generators, and they put them all around the world. They're like hundreds and hundreds now all over the world, connected back to Princeton via the Internet. And when major events have happened on the planet, these people have basically correlated the statistics of the random number generators, and they've shown that when huge tragic events or huge celebratory events occur, like Diana's death or, you know, 9/11 or, you know, the bombings in Syria or whatever. In other words, when anything takes the news and monopolizes it for several days, they get all kinds of pings in the so-called random number generators. The mm-hmm. random number generators become less random.
And they become ordered.
Yeah, and their model is that it's consciousness, human consciousness, which is focusing on those events and thereby causing tremors in the force, ripples in the field, that generate less randomness at those times than at other times. That's their model, okay? The cute part is that for 9/11, Radin reports that this ordering of the random fields occurred 4 hours before the first plane struck the first tower.
Oh, my goodness.
So there's an incredible asynchronicity of time here. So who's getting information? In other words, this egg experiment shows that you don't need CERN, you just need to focus on a lot of people. And there now is a potential, if we created a physical matrix of enough eggs per square mile around the Earth, you could basically do what they did in a Minority Report. You could see bumps in the field, in the non-random numberness of those eggs closest to what was going to happen. And you could basically say that in that square mile, something that was going to focus the world attention is going to happen in the next few hours. You don't know what it is. You don't know where it is, but it's somewhere within that square mile. That would be so incredibly helpful in averting, for instance, these so-called random terrorist events. Because you basically then would saturate that square mile that the eggs were showing anomalies. You'd find whatever was going to happen there, and you'd stop it before it happened.
Well, the interesting thing about the quantum computer from D-Wave is that it's designed to recognize patterns, and it operates utilizing both coherence and decoherence. And when I hear you talk about patterns developing within these random number generators, it makes me think about coherence.
Yes.
And coherence in a quantum computer reduces the number of errors.
Yep.
So that your model is much more stable and more accurate. So if we take it from that standpoint, I would say that the quantum computer is able to predict human behavior by stimulating a population to go to war, and it already knows the outcome. This has been done since the early 70s. You know, tabletop exercises, if you will, in the computer for military operations. But now we're doing it on a worldwide scale with computers that have the equivalent processing power of 7 billion human brains. And each brain basically, you know, processes about a petaflop of data at any given moment. So this is a computer system we can hardly wrap our heads around. And the speed is not just the issue here. It's its ability to take what is known as combinatorial optimization and look at a problem by applying all possible solutions simultaneously and then extracting the answer with a 99% probability of accuracy.
Mm. That's pretty freaky. Darren has joined the conversation. Good morning, Darren.
Hi, Tony.
Hi.
I had a question about CERN. Who's paying for CERN? How many are there? How many colliders are there? And what are they saying that they're trying to find publicly?
Well, they say they're trying to recreate the Big Bang, the moment that the universe started. They're trying to find the elementary particles, the singularity even, of where everything began. They're over 60 countries, but there are subsets of that. A total of about 160 countries come and go, but 60 core. And they are the ones that are paying for this. And
now, this is the European community. We're not part of it, right?
No, we are a major funder. And
wait. The U.S. So when we dropped when we dropped the big collider in Texas, collider, we took our resources and we put them into CERN instead.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. And therefore, what we have is, what was the other part of your question? I'm sorry.
How many colliders?
How many colliders are there? It's basically a daisy chain of colliders, and you have two ring base that feed into the final stage is a 400 giga electron volt super proton synchrotron that feeds into the main ring. But it starts with Van de Graaff generators, very old technology, and then they begin in a daisy chain to accelerate further and further until they can inject using actual injectors and radio frequency pulse accelerators to accelerate the particles. They're adding a new linear to it called the AWAKE project, which is a plasma wake field technology only 30 meters in length. And that is creating an entirely new set of physics.
You know, I just had a wild thought. Among the other places on the planet that Robin and I should go is the middle of the CERN ring on the surface in one of those buildings with the Accutron and measure what's going on in the field when it's on.
I'll tell you exactly where to go. There's a traffic circle that is – it's a traffic circle that sits 300 feet above the north field target. In the center of the ring is the north field target, and 300 feet above it is a traffic circle. That's where they send – when they're done with the beam, they dump the beam, or if they have a problem, they dump the beam at the north field target. That is where I believe they are going to take the linear accelerator and combine the energies. They're preloading the linear with of the beams coming out of the ring, the breach, they're going to target the north field.
If you're hundreds of feet above the action, because it's buried deep underground, 300 feet below you. That's 300 feet is what, 30 stories. It's a skyscraper below you.
Yep.
The mass of the Earth should shield you from all the EM. So all you would get would be the pure torsion effects. And I like to measure it when it's just running, not colliding with anything, and when they dump the beams into the various targets. And you say that if you position yourself above that traffic circle, right under you, 300 feet down is where they do that.
Yeah, and the target is shielded. It's concrete and lead layers.
So the only thing that would come out would be torsion. Okay.
Right.
Let's add someone else to the conversation.
Sure.
I thought we were going to, they went away. Darn. Please call back. 909, area code. So anything else, Darren?
No, that's it. I think that's all I got.
Good question.
But I'm looking forward to... I'd like to go over there with you, go to that traffic circle when it's doing. Could you do it when it's colliding too? Would it be different?
Well, that's what you'd measure. Yeah, I remember on the surface, nothing is supposed to be detectable, visible, noticeable, right? Right, Tony?
Well, your magnetic lines of force, because they are distorting our magnetosphere when they're running. So you can measure the magnetic lines of force
you would probably
emanating
get a bubble
from there.
I think Dana's joined us. Are you there, Dana? Hello.
This isn't Dana.
Oh, who is this?
My name is Dan.
Dan, okay.
How does the electric universe model address action at a distance?
Spooky action at a distance, Einstein's comment. You're talking about quantum entanglement. They describe it as instantaneous thought communication, that the planets, the stars, even human beings, we can think and communicate electrically through quantum entanglement without factoring time in. It's now. It's in the present. Present time communication. Speed of light doesn't even factor into it.
So does the electric universe model allow for speeds faster than light?
Well, you're not right. And you're not, in terms of communication, you're not talking about speed of light at all. You're talking about the simultaneous already existing line of communication that's already pre-existing between everything in the universe. That's why they call it the present or the now.
I'm not sure his question is applied to the Bell discontinuity. I think he was talking about in a plasma universe. Correct me if I'm wrong, caller. If you have stars connected by tendrils of plasma and they're getting their energy from each other, is that communication? Is that three-space communication at the speed of light or below the speed of light, or is it in excess of the speed of light?
Well, it's the speed in which electrons move.
Okay, so that would be in three space below the speed of light.
Right.
Does that answer the question, caller?
Not exactly. I was just wondering, does it allow for things to move, say, physical mass or something to move faster than light?
No.
I would not think so.
Subluminal.
Okay?
Okay. I'll just have to think about it.
All righty. Thank you. Darren, you're still with us. Anything else?
Yeah. Have they found anything, like, when it comes to the particles with CERN? Is there any big discovery they made that made it all worth it?
Well, wait. You've been under your house for the last year, right? You're not aware of the Higgs boson? Tony, tell me about the Higgs boson discovery.
Yeah, late 2012, early 2013, they crunched the numbers, took about 6 months to crunch all the data from the trajectories in one of the colliders, and they believe with a 90% probability that they did discover the Higgs boson, coined the God particle by the media, not by CERN.
Yeah, I heard that. So was that a theoretical, that was a theory that it existed, and then they proved it?
Well, they think they proved it, but in the electric model of the universe, Higgs boson as well as the Higgs field does not exist.
And what
do
you
think? It's still theoretical. I think it's theoretical. I think most of this is just jobs programs, jobs justification. They are also weapons programs, which we haven't talked about, but primarily their goal is to open this portal, interdimensional research.
Hmm. Well, we only have a couple, 3 minutes left in the show. It's amazing. It went by so fast. I guess we're going to have you back. And we'll discuss the other things we didn't talk about, because obviously there are going to be some other developments. In the time we have remaining, let's talk about your books. Where can people get them?
Sure. Through my website, you can either download for any device or you can order print copies of both my books. I have a new book coming out at the end of this month, a collaboration with three other authors called Revising Reality, and I've contributed two chapters, one on Electric Universe, one on CERN, in a lot more detail than we've been able to go through tonight.
So in the final minute or two we have here, we've got about 2 minutes. See, what else did I want to ask you? You have a conference coming up, right?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. September 30th through October 2nd, I'll be in Knoxville, Tennessee at the Marriott. I'll be joined by John B. Wells and a number of other people. I'll be speaking the first day, but I'll be there all 3 days in order to meet and greet. I'd love to meet people. I just did a conference in June in Colorado. I love public speaking, and I enjoy the one-on-one outside of the lecture hall as well.
And there's our music. Well, Tony, thank you so much. This is just kind of an opening a door, kind of poking our head in, looking around. There's a lot more that I think is going to be going on with CERN this year, if we're all right that the end of the year is a nodal point. So we will talk then. Tomorrow morning, we're going to talk with an old friend of mine from Britain. We're going to talk about hyperdimensional physics in a totally new way. Experimental data. Amazing experimental tabletop data you can do in your kitchen, and it won't blow you away. So until then, just remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.